And right now, let's head to Russia. The Winter Olympics, it's off and running in the city of Sochi, and this Games may well be remembered as the one where top sponsors like Coca-Cola and fast food giant McDonald's copped a battering from gay rights activists for their involvement. But aside from that, is it even appropriate that these fast food and soft drink giants continue to sponsor the biggest sporting event in the world? When many parts of the globe are facing a health crisis on a grand scale with rising levels of obesity and diabetes, should these companies be allowed to market themselves through sport at any level, particularly to children? With me to discuss is John Davis, sports branding and marketing expert. John is the Dean of the S.P. Jain School of Global Management and the author of 8 books on marketing, including The Olympic Games Effect. And John, Coca-Cola, it's the longest continuous sponsor of the Games, dating back to Amsterdam 1928, and they'll be on board till at least 2020. So what is it about the Olympic Games that makes it so attractive to these companies?
The Olympics are the world's biggest sports stage, and they reach a vast audience. So when you look at the Summer Games, you're looking at 4.5 billion viewers around the world. And in the case of the Winter Games, it's over 3 billion. And so it's naturally attractive for the large companies to want to have access to that audience, simply because they can reach so many people more effectively than they could with a series of individual campaigns to specific target markets. And the reason why the International Olympic movement has grown so much over the past 40 or 50 years has been the growth, particularly since 1984, the growth of the sponsorship program. It's enabled countries around the world that otherwise couldn't afford to send teams to send those teams. And so these top sponsors, of which there's 10 companies right now, they contribute a vast amount of money, close to $1 billion annually, U.S. dollars, that helps support the NOCs, which are the National Olympic Committees, and the OCOGs, which are the organizing committees of the Olympic Games for each of the host cities. It helps them send their athletes to the Games.
McDonald's is the official restaurant of the Olympic Games and even has 2 outlets in Sochi's Olympic Village. Its first involvement with the Games started unofficially at the 1968 Winter Olympics in Grenoble, when it flew in hamburgers to US athletes who said they were homesick for McDonald's food. Nevertheless, in recent years, questions have been raised about whether it's okay for such companies to be sponsoring the Olympic Games.
Came out in London 2012 when there was a fair amount of controversy about both Coca-Cola and McDonald's being companies that represent products that aren't considered nutritionally healthy. And what was the IOC going to do about it? And then Jacques Roch at the time had indicated that they're always interested in ensuring that the companies that sponsor the Olympics are those that share Olympic values. And of course, where it gets interesting is what you determine is what are those Olympic values? Because if you broaden it to say it's about lifestyle and ensuring that you're engaged with life and leading an active lifestyle and participating in sports, that's one thing. It's a different thing if those companies are claiming directly that their products actually contribute towards a healthy lifestyle. And that's where you see a clear demarcation that those companies are not claiming that per se. What they are saying is, as a large global brand, they are supporters of these active lifestyles. Now, the other question, too, is where the Olympics can get additional monies, which they get from domestic sponsors. So there are other ways for them to reach out and get additional sponsorship monies. But with that said, the top sponsorship program is so expensive that it's the purview of a very small range of companies. It's not as if there's a big backlog of companies that are willing to do what Coke and McDonald's or the other top sponsors are willing to do. That's why there's only 10.
So you're saying that the underlying message here is we have to play with the big boys, and the big boys are McDonald's and Coke, and we may not like what they do globally in every part of their operations, but they're too important to us financially to say goodbye.
At this stage, that's what it looks like, although I have to imagine, and I don't have any evidence of this, I have to imagine that the conversation inside the IOC is fairly actively around what's the next stage. What do we do after 2020? Do we renegotiate with these organizations, or do we try to find alternative sponsors that are perhaps less of a magnet and a lightning rod for controversy?
Speaking of controversy, of course, I'm sure both McDonald's and Coke and all the other sponsors involved in the Sochi Games are in some part tearing their hair out over the branding of the Games being associated with what's been claimed by some parts of the community globally as anti-gay laws introduced by the Putin government.
Oh, it's a huge source of controversy. And like any global stage, whenever you have companies that are sponsoring, you are also subject to any of the associations, whether positive or negative, that come out of that. And of course, with Russia changing its laws last year, specifically to make it more anti-gay, you've got the companies now associated as supporting that kind of campaign when directly the companies are actually coming out saying, no, that's not the case. We certainly support diverse lifestyles, but they are now caught up in the entire media storm around us.
A Coca-Cola executive has been quoted as saying, "When people know we're sponsoring the Olympics, they like us more." And on Coke's website, they say they will, quote, "market responsibly, including no advertising to children under 12 anywhere in the world," unquote. Top sponsors like Coke and McDonald's get priority when it comes to TV ads during Olympic coverage. So what about the under-12s glued to the telly during the Games? Won't they end up liking Coke just a little more? Sydney University and the Cancer Council of New South Wales has conducted research into sports sponsorship in Australia. Claire Hughes is the Cancer Council's Nutrition Program Manager.
We were interested in finding out, well, firstly, what the extent of food and alcohol sports sponsorship was, but also what impact it has on children and their perceptions of those brands.
What did they tell you?
Certainly more than half of the kids that we spoke to could identify at least one of the companies that were sponsoring their local community sport that they were playing, and the vast majority of those were the unhealthy foods when they did recognise them. 69% said that they had positive association with those products and those brands. And
They thought they were cool, didn't they?
They thought they were cool, exactly. Exactly. So what was interesting as well is that when you look at the elite sponsorship versus the local sponsorship, when you spoke to parents, more parents thought that kids would be influenced by that elite sponsorship, and only about half of parents thought that their children would be influenced by the local or community sponsorship of their own sport. But when you spoke to the children, it was actually the other way around, and more kids reported being influenced and having positive associations with the companies that sponsored their community sport and the sports that they were playing over the elite sport. But when you think about the elite sport, there is so much exposure. You know, the Olympics, for example, will reach many more children across the world, but also in Australia, than those that are just participating in community sports.
Well, just remind us, how rife is fast food and soft drink sponsorship of local sport when it comes to children in Australia?
Food and alcohol was around 23% of the clubs that we spoke to, and we're talking about clubs from a whole range of popular sports, some of the most popular sports with children. So it included netball and swimming and rugby league and cricket, for example. So there was probably about 7 or 8 sports that were included. But what we did see is that it was the two big players that we've been speaking about here when it comes to the Olympic Games were also the big players when it came to sponsorship of the community sports. So Little Athletics, for example, was one area where we saw a lot of sponsorship from McDonald's.
What kind of support can manifest when it comes to that sponsorship? Is it all about money?
Less than a quarter of the clubs that did receive funding was actually getting financial sort of sponsorship. What you did see is a lot of branding on sports equipment, for example, or the logos on T-shirts. And a classic example, like we've seen recently, a campaign for McDonald's and Little Athletics, where you do see the big golden arches on the children as they're running down the track.
Which means every home video, every photograph taken by proud parents at these events invariably will have a logo attached to it.
Exactly. And then, of course, after you've finished the race or you've had the competition, you see vouchers being given out to go to the same family restaurant to reward your child for their efforts, regardless of whether or not they've won.
Regulations prohibit these companies from marketing unhealthy food to children during C and P rated TV programs. But currently there are no regulations around who can sponsor children's sport. And Claire says some children who play in clubs which also field adult teams may even be exposed to alcohol advertising.
The fact that we're talking about the same companies sponsoring sport at the elite level, at the Olympic level, right down to the grassroots community level, means that this is not something that's just happened by pure chance. Sports sponsorship at all levels is seen to be one way that these companies can sort of push their brands out and create children's association with those brands and positive associations, because kids are having fun at little athletics or at basketball. So they do carry over these positive associations to the companies and the products that they make.
So, Professor John Davis, do you think the IOC and other major international sporting bodies will have to start coming to grips with the reality of what their relationship with these major food and drink companies looks like on the global stage?
Oh, yeah. I think there's going to be increased conversation around that. And my guess is discussions have been taking place for several years on that. And it's partly contractual obligations right now that are keeping them from pursuing this in a bigger way until those run out. We don't know what the change will be, but I do suspect that this is going to not diminish over time. I think it's going to get increased attention by them.
And Claire, do you honestly believe we can find another way?
I think what our research found is that perhaps these clubs aren't reliant on those companies as much as they think they are. And I guess the challenge might be that they need to look a bit broader. But it's likely that actually it's the big companies that are coming knocking on the door of the codes, not the other way around. So there may need to be some investigation of alternative funding sources. But we found it very hard to believe that there wouldn't be interest from other parties and other organisations that have a role to play in these local communities.
Claire Hughes, Professor John Davis, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you both very much indeed for joining us on RN First Bite.
Thank you.
Thank you, Michael.